July 25, 2020, it's a Live for Pedro show.
Thank you.
Walk for Pedro show. Happy Saturday. I think it's the last one of July. Last one of the month. Summer's in the middle, huh? Trippy. Started with After the Crescent, John Coltrane. Protest and Survive, End of Hope. Which kind of sounds like contradictory, but the man... Yeah, Brother Matt's still at the Love Grotto because we're at Quentin Quarantino mode, so... I'm not all man alone. Those software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention. I got Ken Warhol. Warrob?
There you go. That'll do it.
Warrob. Okay. Sorry.
Tough German
little,
name.
Yeah, I got a little dyslexic there. And he's calling from Brooklyn, people. And Ken, thanks so much for being on the show.
Oh, it's a damn honor for me, sir. I'm so happy to be able to talk to you today.
Well, right back. Your journey seems with music, and we'll get later to the writing, too. Very interesting. I've had a few cats on that do music and writing. You know, I've always had to connect being inspired by writers because it's harder to, well, you have to abstractly transform their imagery, expression, into, like, lit riffs, where if you listen to somebody else's song, you could just steal the riffs, so I feel a little less filthy. But Ken, tell me your earliest musical recollection, please.
Warren Zevon, Werewolves of London. I remember hearing it like on AM radio as a little kid, and I used to sing it, but in my simple New Jersey mind as a very, very young kid, the only thing I could remember was the werewolf sound. I didn't remember any of the other lyrics. So I would just go, ooh, and then like mumble something. And I remember singing that like in the back of my mom's car.
Okay. Well, radio rock, right? Or what, cassette tape?
No, this would have been like, you know, AM was still around, yeah, so maybe it was CBS FM here on the East Coast. Who the hell knows? But I remember hearing that, and I picked up, like, that's like ear candy for a little kid, right?
Sure. The sounds. I remember there was a Boris Karloff, it was Bobby Boris, whatever his name, and he had to do the Monster Mash, and it had sounds, too.
Yeah, I had a 45 of that, I remember, as a kid.
Okay.
And like, yeah, but, yeah.
Can you remember the first record you bought yourself?
I want to say it was The Police, Ghost in the Machine, maybe?
Okay.
Either that, yeah, it like bought myself other than, but I remember the first album I really wanted and somebody gave to me was Kiss Alive 2.
Okay.
Because I was a Kiss fanatic as a kid.
Yeah, we've seen them a few times before they even had that first album. I remember when the first album came out, we were like, man, it's so slow. Because, of course, live, they didn't play, you know, they're opening up trying to sell it, right? So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're not all careful like the record. Like really trippy. What about? Oh, so you grew up where in New Jersey?
I grew up in Parsippany, which is like maybe 30 minutes outside of New York City.
Okay, because when you look at, it's funny, you know, living in here, California, 54 years. I always know because they put the New Jersey on the license plate, and it looks like a backwards California. That's a little bit tinier.
It just looks like a mangled tumor when you see it on that license plate. Like, it doesn't look like anything.
But it's flipped over. It's like the mirror image of us. And you guys got a ghost. You know, I've played in Asbury Park and stuff at the Stone Pony, and there's a shoreline and all that. And very interesting. I think people only know Newark because of the New York City thing, maybe. But it's actually pretty rural in some parts. And jug handles. Making left-hand turns from Bar Stopper.
That's why it takes forever to get anywhere. You got to do the damn jug handle to get on a side street.
The only frat party I think I've ever played, or maybe there was another one, but I know one time in Princeton, so the Mr. Franklin School set up there. What about in the pad? Was there musical instruments?
In my home growing up?
Yeah,
I was a drummer. So that's where I got my start. Like, it was funny. I was listening to you talk to Paige Hamilton.
Yeah.
You guys talk about, hey, it's never too late to start.
Right.
And so, like, as a kid, I was a drummer. I was really into Stuart Copeland. And then when I got into heavy music.
That's probably why you bought that record.
Yeah. And, cause, I mean, the Police were, as a kid, I remember just being floored by them and how incredible they were. And this was like pre-synchronicity, you know, so they were like still that incredible band. And then, all through high school, played drums. When I went away to college, played drums.
Did you get a kit right away, or were you on pots and pans and shit?
No, I made the mistake of going school band.
Marching band or
the like sit down orchestra band.
Oh,
and they
okay.
give you yeah. yeah, they give you the drum pad and the sticks, and they're walking you through the rudiments and everything, and I couldn't do it. I didn't like it.
Yeah.
I didn't have the patience for it. I regretted that later.
But you got a track kit. What would you ask your parents? Where'd you prac? In the bedroom?
We were lucky enough. We had a basement. Jersey has a basement, so you always have a basement. And the guy is now my brother-in-law, but he was dating my sister in high school. Found a friend who had the old Rogers Silver Sparkle kit for like $50, and I had paper route money stashed away, and I did that, and it was the kind that it was so cheap. It came with like only one cymbal stand, and it had that bass drum mounted cymbal stand that would always fall over. And that thing would always, like, if you hit it too hard, you just see it going down, you can never catch it. I wound up cracking the cymbal, so I had it. I took a shoestring and tied that to the tom-tom.
Well, the tom-tom was probably mounted to the kick too, right?
Yeah. So it had that big, arched sort of mounting thing to the kick.
Yeah.
And then first band I ever played in high school, the dude who played guitar had the same exact colored kit. And he just gave it to me, but the bass drums were different size, and I didn't want to mount the toms on each bass drum, so I came up with the stupid idea of getting a cymbal stand and duct taping around the middle so the clamps would hold on opposite sides, because I was like, I want the Alex Van Halen kit.
Yeah, but what about a snare drum stand?
No, because I had two toms in the middle.
I understand.
So with the kit he gave me, I had two bass drums, two toms in the middle, two floor toms, which is way too many drums for a high school kid. You know? And my parents hated me for it.
Okay. So in the basement, you, like after school with your buddies, you had band, right?
Oh, yeah, metal bands.
Okay,
you know, that's
okay.
Like, yeah.
So
you want to learn how to become a drummer? Learn a Motley Crue song.
That's how you didn't take lessons. You learned off of records like George Hurley.
Yep.
And it was Tommy Lee.
Yeah, I wish I could say I got as good as George Hurley, but, you know, Tommy Lee.
What George Hurley did was he bought Happy Jack by The Who and Spectrum by Billy Cobham and got some headphones. Fucking Tom's up.
The range on those two, the fact that that's what he figured out, like Spectrum, like, are you kidding me?
Well, if you wonder that's why Minutemen sounds strange.
Oh, but that's why his shit was so inventive on the drum. Like, nobody played like George. It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was a weird mix.
Same thing with D. Boone. He was like a mix between John Fogerty and Buck Dharma.
That I've always wanted to ask you about the... How Blue Oyster Cult figured it, because your cover of Blue Oyster Cult I still love to this day.
We started playing it when we were 13. That's why I play it, because it's a common thread from all my playing from what D. Boone to up to these days.
Wow. Like nobody, it's rare, at least maybe more recently, but if you went back 10 years and you asked somebody if they were a Blue Oyster Cult fan, they would give you a weird look.
Well, you know, most of it's up to, like, Agents of Fortune. I don't really know anything past that. But they did. I mean, truth be told, they had a big influence on us. Because, you know, there was no movement yet. They're all arena rock bands, and they were a little strange compared to the other ones, you know? You had to send it for the words. The words came out of computer paper, and they were strange as hell. And the cymbal, and there was no real front man. They all took turns singing. I mean, there was something about it. I don't know. I want to play Ark of Movement here, okay?
Play Ark of Movement. First show in Queens. Hey, play Ark of Movement, you prick.
Show, yeah, that's Arca Movement from End of Hope. Andrea Belfi, the original drummer that I'll show you to Mine Isle, sent me some live stuff, and this was three tunes all together, Shale, Strata, and Ravine, on something he did live, and very good, very interesting. I wish him well. I just had a daughter, Bianca. A few after that, Hearts of Flowers, brand new, and then End of Hope, from End of Hope. I guess you call that the eponymous.
Yeah.
Ubiquitous means everywhere. Eponymous means the same thing. Yeah, okay. Same name. What about this? You're doing this in high school. What'd you call it? Basement metal bands?
Yeah.
Okay. What do you do with music after school, after high school?
You know, I went to college. I didn't play in bands then, so I was just still playing, but not really playing in bands. And then after that, I was playing some. I went to school in Ohio, I was playing in bands in Ohio, but nothing that was going anywhere. You know, bands here and there, or like you play with some dude who still lives at home with his dad. You know, he's living off his dad's retirement money, so he's got the rehearsal room in the basement, and the band winds up breaking up after like 2 weeks, you know, that type of shit.
You never do a gig?
I did one gig with them, and I
quit. Yeah, because I wanted to know about your first gig. What was that like?
would that be the first one?
I don't know. Wasn't there. You got to tell me, Kent.
Yeah. Because, well, this is good. Because this guy was a bit of a nut. His dad, like, I got to tell the story of his dad. Because his dad was involved, so he said, in U.S. Army testing. And the guy had one leg that was shorter than the other. Really old guy, and I always felt bad for him. And he would just kind of sit in the kitchen all day and listen to the radio while his idiot son would have the bands down in the basement just making a shit ton of noise. And I was like, man, I feel bad for this old guy. He's got to listen to our shit. This is going on. And his son was kind of an idiot. And we played a gig. It was our first gig. And it was like, you know, half covers, half metal covers and stuff, and then some of our own. And I would go on the record as saying our own stuff was not very great. But, you know, hey, you want to play in a band, you play. Yeah. And midway through the set, the guy breaks a guitar string, and he's got one of them locking tuners.
Oh.
You know, so he can do his massive tremolo soloing stuff.
Well, dive bomber whammy bar.
Yeah. And so he breaks his strings. He can't get the locking nut unlocked.
Yeah, of course.
So he goes and begs the one of the other bands to let him borrow one of their guitars. And it's this, like, younger kid who's like, hey, it's my only guitar. Don't break any strings, whatever you do. And the guy is being an asshole to him. He's like, yeah, sure, just give me the guitar, you know. And I'm like, why am I playing this band with this guy? So we finish the set. We get done. The band that loaned us the guitar goes on, and they kill. They're awesome. It's three young kids. They've got their own style. They're doing it. And I'm like, man, they're so much better than us. And he's coming up to me. He's like, man, these guys are shit. They're just terrible. They suck. And I just go, you know, I think I'm done. He's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, I think I'm done. I'm going to pack up my shit and go. And that was it. I never played in that band again.
Whoa. So your first gig was kind of a negative experience.
Yeah. So it was kind of like that. Yeah. Well, you know, you can
at least he didn't break the kid's guitar. I heard this story about this guy lending his bass to Jocko, and Jocko starts dancing on it, singing "Happy Birthday."
What are you gonna do?
Yeah, I know it's Jocko.
It's after that first time.
Yeah. Or maybe you're a slow learner.
Yeah, or maybe not. Maybe 6 or 7, and you'll figure it out.
Yeah, of course. So, okay. So, you know, that was probably kind of a sea change in life. You were probably more picky with the next band, right?
Well, what I did with the next band was I actually, through a friend, found a guy. We had all the kind of same musical interests, so we didn't really have a band yet, but we had each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you meet those people, and I've been lucky enough that I've had several kind of connections with different folks over the years where it's like, yeah, I can do some stuff with this person, and there's a synergy to it. And so we just started writing songs, and the songs we were writing were really, really good. And then we just didn't know how to put together a band that went out and played and toured, you know, because it's like, I'm not telling you anything you don't know because you went and did it, but it's like when you first are starting, you're like, how does somebody go about doing this?
Yeah,
you don't
sure.
really know.
And then you actually find out there's a lot of different ways you can do it, kind of.
Yeah. And the weird twist at the time was I was working for this company called Belkin Productions, which was the big concert promoter in Ohio at that time, and they had been there for years. I think Live Nation bought them out now. I think Live Nation owns them like everybody else. And, but
that's why we won the Cold War.
Belkin,
right?
So
that's why we won the Cold War, to make it safe for free enterprise and competition in the marketplace.
Yeah, and one company controlling the entire ticketing industry.
You're working for a Square John company, but meanwhile you're trying to put together this you and your buddies, like, individual music. Yeah.
And that's where I first learned recording. So we go and record the guy who was the biggest pot dealer in Ashtabula County in Ohio, sunk a ton of his money into, at that time, this is going back a ways, but at that time, you remember, like, everybody was hot on those Tascam digital 8-tracks.
Oh, yeah.
That was like a big thing. So my guys, a lot of the guys who were in the band with me, they all grew up in Ashtabula County. They all knew this dude. And they're like, we'll go up and record with this guy. He'll do us a good deal. We can record. You know, he's got a setup in his attic. And I'm like, great. So we go there. And I'm like, whoa, look at this pro studio, because he's got a Mackie board and a Tascam 8-track. I think I'm walking into, you know, this, like, pro setup. You know?
Right. Capital.
But I did, like, first time recording, like, banged out my drum tracks. I'm like, great. We're doing awesome. Like, I did all first takes. We're going to be great. And the guitar player that started the band with me, he bangs out all his rhythm tracks, all like one or two takes, and we're like, man, we're flying here. And the rest of the band got too high, and we got nothing done over the next day and a half, and we walked away with nothing.
Fuck.
And that was kind of the last hurrah. That was kind of like, we never really got back together after
wow.
So learning experience. And
That's how you get calluses, right? You need a little friction.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like, you know, like we were talking about backing up your computer shit. You got to have it go bad once to learn how not to do it, right?
Right. You know, that's why I tell people it's good to take turns with situations like, because you can't learn everything always being the boss, even though that society promotes that. But if you're always getting your way, you're going to miss out on learning a lot of shit.
You need a good feedback loop, right?
Right, right. So, or backhand.
Shit.
Yeah, of reality. Both keeping hands, keeping helping full of whatever in both hands right in your face. And then you have to deal. Yeah, you have to react and deal. Yeah, knowledge isn't just collecting facts. It's dealing with situations and... So those were two kind of bad ones. So you and your buddy never did the music again.
No, and then I left Ohio. I moved back east, and I moved into Brooklyn. And that's where I was like, I can't play drums anymore. I'm in Brooklyn living in a tiny apartment. What am I going to do? Where am I going to play drums at? You know, unbeknownst to me at that time, like, well, I probably could have tried to get a shared, like, drum room or something. You know, I didn't know that then. But that's when I picked up guitar. So I didn't start playing guitar until I was 30.
Wow, Joe Beiser was 27 in Saccharine Trust.
He's phenomenal guitar player.
That's what I try to tell people. It's never too late. Just because you don't have the kid experience, it don't mean you can't, you know, jump on right out of town.
No, and when I heard you and Paige talking about that, I was kind of laughing. I'm like, yeah, I didn't really start playing until I was 30. Now, that was some time ago, so I haven't had a chance to practice since then.
Yeah, no wine before it's time. You know, Vincent painted only his last 10 years of his life.
God, he crammed that in the last 10.
Yeah, fuck, just self-portraits. There's like thousands. Okay, we're at the end of the first hour, July 25, 2020, the Schwab Pedro Show. Special guest, Ken Warrob.
I get close enough.
Okay. Hold tight for hour two. July 25, 2020, second hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
Everything is impermanent. It's just that some things are more so. This home will not stay our home. This home is a step on the way to someplace else. Or so we say that we're saving up, and instead we stay and stay, but still waiting for that other place, the place we could be if we did everything right with diligence and thrift, and found our way to the next place. But for now, we're here, and the radiator hiss says the heat is on. Thank you.
You ever heard of Cliff Burton?
Bass player. Play this. He disproved Jack Michelin. The theory by the poets, Jack Michelin, Beatman, and Dustman. He disproved them. He's never even heard of them. Disprove his long lost open theory. Shows not to be known by all. You don't even know what war and peace means because someone has told you that. How can we have peace on earth when people will always be hostile against each other for nothing at all, even the smallest of nothing? Or people who, or a person even, save you that embarrassment. With a single bullet left in his gun, this one person's gun. And this person will say, might as well shoot someone today for fun, maybe even a baby for fun. I'll shoot some random baby, some random person for fun today, because I'll go to jail happily, knowing that I fulfilled my purpose of shooting some random guy in the face. Or anyone, really. Therefore, from all that, you conclude that we'll never have peace on earth. That the war on peace will always be a failure, never a victory. I'll say, how do you know that? How do you know these things? And you'll all say, because someone else told me these things. I did not know them. And I was dead when they told me these things. Now I'm alive, and I scientifically inspire the world to stop inspiring with this conceited wisdom.
Pedro Show. Started second hour off with And a Hope doing Guilt Trip. Then we got James Rocket with Tenants. Blue Coop, that's got two of the Alice Cooper bass player and two of the Blue Oyster Cults, the Bouchard Brothers, with Untamed Youth in Connecticut there. I think near Danbury. Tunnel Rat, that's a young man from Ohio, Pullin' Mine, maybe Columbus. Two Backs from Italy with Radar, and finally Eternal Black, the Ghost. And I was just hip listeners to the fact that Eternal Black was actually before End of Hope, but you know, I just rolled the dice and was guessing, and I once again guessed wrong. So, Ken, enlighten us to Eternal Black, since that's the earliest music that you gave me to play on the show. How did that get going? That's a Brooklyn band.
Yeah, so I wanted to do, you may know Wino from...
Oh, of course.
He sang Think Vitus, and he had The Obsessed, and The Obsessed is, and Wino's music, including his other band, Spirit Caravan, and The Hidden Hand, which is a great band too. It's always been really important to me. He's also the guy, when I was first learning to play guitar, that I was like, I just latched onto, you know, you have those guys when you're first really learning an instrument where you're like, kind of, I like that sound. I want to be able to do that. And Wino was the guy that there was just some type of connection where I felt like I could play that and do that well, and I was really into it, and still to this day, like, I always dissect his stuff and try to learn it as much as I can, because I've always been enamored with it, and I always wanted to do a band like The Obsessed, because at that time, The Obsessed had broken up, you know, they had a rough go where, you know, they were big in Germany, but in the States, there weren't that many people into them when they were around in the early 90s.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think they had a Frenchman on bass.
Yeah, Guy. He was right on bass.
And I got to tell you, Wino, you know, I'm always thinking about early Black Sabbath, and I was kind of like what you're talking about with Geezer Butler. I tried to learn a lot of the stuff he did.
Oh, yeah. Iommi's another guy, but Wino takes Iommi and he sort of carries it to this different place, because he's got a bit of jazz in his head,
yeah,
like you do, you know? So he's taken it into this whole different place, and there's some weird ass scales he's using, and his solos have this intensity and, I'll say, insanity to them that I'm always like, yeah, I'm not a clean soloist. I like the insanity of his solos, and that was the one thing I focused on, was like, there has to be this sort of madness to that solo, you know?
Did you like Linus with Scotty?
I did, but I like the Wino years better.
Okay.
And I know,
but you
like, I know some people
Dave
fall
Chandler
either
guitar? Because Dave Chandler guitar kind of different than Wino.
Oh, yeah, much different. And Dave had that weird insanity to his playing, too.
Yeah.
Because he was kind of keying off Ginn.
Yeah.
And he would do those solos, which they're not solos. And to call them noise is to discredit what he's doing. Like, he's just going to this psychological place that, like, your shred guys could never get to. They just don't have the headspace to go do something like that. So I love when Chandler would do that. And I love seeing him live. He's so into what he's doing live.
Oh, yeah.
It's fantastic to watch.
Wino's a little more reserved.
Wino just projects. He's just got that aura. That guy knows what he's doing. But I love seeing, if Wino shows up with a glockenspiel and a tuba, I'll go see that guy play.
Yeah. I want to play, you know? Lost in the Fade.
This is another. I like sad songs more than anything else.
It's a good day for it, I guess. In front of a fireplace. Or a coffee pot. Seeing that this is the WMMS Coffee Break Concert.
Kind of good whiskey. This is a Jackson Browne song, and it's called These Days. It's pretty sad.
I've been out walking. I don't do that much talking these days. These days I seem to think a lot about the things that I forgot to do. And all of the times I had a chance to. I had a lover. I don't believe I'll risk another these days. These days. And if I seem to be afraid to live the life that I have made in song, well, it's just that I've been losing. La 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 la. I've stopped my rambling. I don't do that much gambling these days. These days I spend my time alone and count the time in quarter tones content. Don't confront me with my failures. I had not forgotten them. La 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 la.
You wetback slug, the big men are gonna talk shop. 18 holes and dinner at the club, prime rib, no Mexican slop. Everything's in place, the muck's been greased, he's drooling to be soaked. Oh, and a 9 iron for this lie, Jose. I just made a joke. Don't you wanna be like me? Don't you want to be free like me? You're dismal, scratching, sucker lives. I love how you look up to me. Crawled out of a New York sewer. Phony Christian porn star screwer. Ah, you know who I am. The POS POTUS, Charlie Tan. Glad we can meet. Are your rooms okay? And did you have a good flight? I've lined up a little evening fun. You're like redheads, right? Gentlemen, how should we proceed? The rainbow rooster cat. I've got a roper lined up at Inside Man, and he's gonna take care of all that. Don't you wanna be like me? Don't you wanna be free? Beyond free, I can get away with anything. I love how they all envy me. I'm the king of slink and slime. Show me you're weak and you're all mine, cause I'm a self-made man. That MAGA monster, Charlie Tan. Yes, the banks are in my pocket, and my lawyers clog the courts. The law slides off my snakeskin back, and all the judges, they've been bought. All you gotta do is just sit tight and watch this dumb chump squirm, cause that's the way the world is. Gentlemen, watch and learn. Don't you wanna be like me? Don't you wanna be free like me? I'm the master distractor. I love how they believe in me. Crawled out of a New York sewer, made a bit at the backs of the poor, that vulgar, lying, yeah, I'm the stable genius, Charlie 10. Charlie 10. Charlie 10. Charlatan. Charlie 10. Charlie 10. Charlatan. 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 Charlatan.
Under. Coming out the clutch, gonna hit you in the gut, gonna kick you in the nuts, cause I'm crazy as fuck. All you suckers out of luck, cause I'm high in a vagina, and I'm a mad mama, gonna smoke a fat dime. Motherfuckers coming at me, and I pop them every time like a zit. A tool that shit to quit, what? Oh shit. I'm not Stone, said the girl with the ash of the teeth. I'm just a little hungry. I said, yeah, I got these eye drops if you want some relief. Your eyes are blazing, then you got a great degree. I'm feeling what you're doing, it should not be how it's here. So come on over to my house and fix yourself to dinner. And then we'll play some music and the real fun will begin. But there ain't nothing wrong with being high. It is such a great way to get by. Now stop. Appreciate the sky.
Walking through the dark in the bright sunshine. Don't be no sense of smoke.
I saw him in New York City, and Chandler's doing some insane solo thing, and Chandler, being the elder statesman that he is, decides he's going to jump into the crowd and go nuts with the guitar, but he's moved up in years, so he's not as flexible and athletic as he used to be, so he can't get back up on the stage, and Wino's kind of watching it, just going like, well, here we are.
Awkward.
Yeah, yeah, it was like great at the start, a little rough on the finish there, dude.
Yeah. So you were explaining about Eternal Black.
Yeah. So, God, that was I really drove that off into a tangent. sorry about that. I tend to do that. So I really wanted to do a band like The Obsessed, like I Hate God, you know, even a little bit of Sleep and everything. And, I knew a guy who, had actually played in like a never got off the ground punk rock cover band. It was like, all right, I'm just looking for people. So grabbed him. And then we put an ad in like Craigslist, like drummer, and put the band names in. And first guy called us up or emailed, was the guy, and he was perfect. And he played with groove and power. And we're like, that's our guy. All right. We got the core. You can attack me for my playing ability, but the one thing I can do as a guitar player is I can write a riff and I can cobble together a song pretty damn fast. And so we just were cranking out songs, and we felt like we had a sound. So we went to go record a 3-song demo.
Yeah.
And the guys who did such a phenomenal job. We're like, screw it. Let's do it as an EP. And then in this day and age, what's great is you don't need a record label. So just, sure. You put that out. You work really hard on telling people about it, and then suddenly it's like, hey, we got a following. Wound up playing a festival or two. All right, let's move on to the next one. And it's really trying to take that sound of The Obsessed and St. Vitus and I Hate God and all that stuff and kind of drag it forward.
Yeah.
So you hear a little bit of the past in there. You hear where, you know, what we're influenced by, but we're also trying to make it our own and to make it something modern. And the thing about St. Vitus and The Obsessed and those bands was like that doom music kind of gave you the willies, made the hair stand up on your arms a little bit. And that's what I always thought was cool about it.
So Eternal Black, does it have any connect to End of Hope?
It does in a way. And, you know, Eternal Black, we're still going, you know, well, we put out, you know, so that's still active. And while I was doing that, I kept thinking about the thing with Eternal Black is it's slower music, you know, as you've heard, you know, it's slower songs, it's slower paced. I'm a massive Motorhead fan, and I'm also a massive Black Flag fan. And I'm like, man, I'd love to do a band that would bring those two things together. And as fate would have it, Eternal Black's playing shows with this band called Bowhead. And the guy singing in Bowhead is Davey Gunner from Kraut, who you might remember.
I remember Kraut.
So Davey's singing in Bowhead, and Davey and I, you know, maybe it's the fact that we're both East Coast Italian dumbasses, but whatever it is, we get along. We connect right away, and we're talking, and we're both in our respective bands and admiring each other. And then, you know, at some point he just goes, hey, man, you ever want to do something? I'd love to do something with you, you know? And I just go, I got an idea. I want to do a band that's like Motorhead and Black Flag. And he just goes, I'm down. Let's do it. And I knew the bass player, Davis, from some other bands. I knew he was a really talented guy, and then I knew the drummer. Dave had his own band called St. Bastard, like his own one-man project, but I knew he was this, like, he's probably a phenomenal drummer. And that came together so damn fast. I think within 2 months, we had the whole album written.
Wow. So in a way, it was a side project.
Oh, yeah. And okay. It just... Because suddenly I didn't, you know, in Eternal Black, I write all the music. So I got to do lyrics. I put all this together.
Yeah. Rudder Man.
Yeah, I bring it all in for the guys, and then, you know, we sort of, you know, put it together. End of Hope, I just have to write riffs. And then we all get in the room, and we hack at that thing like it's a piece of meat.
Oh, so it's more, all that, more, that. More a collab, collaboration.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
See, that's what I was talking about playing different roles. Why always be in the same role in every sitch?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Davey is amazing at, he's got notebooks and on his phone, he's got stuff he's kept for years that I come in with, hey, I've got this collection of riffs, I think it's a song. Me, the bass player and the drummer, we start going, this should be shorter, make this bit a little, one section longer. And then by the time we've got that, he's like, I got it. And Davey's already got like a test set of lyrics. And in the room on that day, we're rolling. So we just had it going fast. And I think it served the music. Like that music's so high energy and so fun to play.
Yeah. That's a bitchin'. We're at the end of the second hour, July 25, 2020, edition of Wap Peter Soap. Special guest, Ken Walrob. Hold tight for hour 3. July 25th, 2020. It's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro show.
Rest up. to hear its call.
Lost its mind.
Lock for Pedro show. Start off the third hour with Into Nothing from Eternal Black. Then Crane with The Bell Rings. Dream Phases with Barred Window. And finally Eternal Black with Some of All Fears. So, by the way, people still going, let's talk about your writing. You like to write. What, five books?
No. I wish I was that damn productive. I did three. Did you Google that?
I went to Goodreads.com.
Ah, okay. I did three. Two short story collections and then one novel about the devil.
Okay. Now, how'd you get it? Is this what you studied at school?
No. Another thing that I just really wanted to do it and picked it up. I used to do record reviews and stuff, you know, and I got to a point with record reviews where I was like, I'm tired of being a damn critic. And I'm I wasn't writing negative reviews. The one thing I was always adding about, like, I'm not going to bash somebody. Like, yeah. There's so much music out there. There's no reason to write a negative review and slag somebody's band, especially when I wasn't making music at that time. But at a certain point, I got to this point where I'm like, why am I writing reviews of other people doing stuff? Like, I need to do some of my own stuff.
Yeah,
and kind of the same way I stumbled into learning how to put a band together and learning how to record or learn how to play guitar or any of that, I just started trying to write, you know, you try to emulate the people you admire, right?
Yeah.
So trying to emulate, like, Vonnegut and Shirley Jackson and you know, all these other writers and Bukowski and John Fonte
Shirley
and all
Jackson,
that stuff.
That's the lottery, right?
Yeah, yeah. As a matter of fact, I read that today because New Yorker republished it. Like, they put it in their latest issue.
Wow.
And every time I read the lottery, I know the ending. I know what's going to happen. I remember
one of the lines from one of the old guys. He goes, "Lottery in June, corn comes soon."
That's right. That's right. The weird part is reading it now.
Yeah.
It feels like it's talking about the environment we're in right now. It's just kind of,
totally.
Yeah.
I heard that she wrote it. She was at the store. And no matter what line, it was the longest line or the short, she's going to be the last one to go through the cashier because she won the lottery.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's where I read she got the idea for the plot.
I was like, that story, like, I remember, here's a childhood memory for you. Elementary school, some teacher came up with the idea that there's a short film version of the lottery. You can find it on YouTube.
Okay.
And they showed it to us in school, and it's the lottery, so at the ending, they're going to stone
her, right? Yeah, right.
Sorry for a spoiler for anybody that hadn't read the lottery yet, but they stone the lady at the end. You know?
Real civilized.
yeah, real civilized, like really civil and good folk about it, but it's her turn, so she's got to come.
Right. Fucked up. Here, I want to play this other project that you just started with this COVID-19 thing. Swarm of Flies.
Goodbye. No. Yeah. darkness left the stain upon my soul. Oh, it's got me shredded. I'm shredded for my skin. It's like it's been waiting. Yeah.
Turkey, 1958. I've got headphones on and a counter in my hand. Back in 51, Howard Hawks said, "Watch the skies." But it was our job to listen to them. It was fitting in a way, because 250 miles east and 12,000 years before, men had laid stones to mark the stars' path. Before ceramics, before crops, before houses, nomads had raised monoliths in their honor. And now, 12,000 years later, we were listening to the first men to die among them.
I'm not an overwriter. I may be an overtalker, but I'm not an overwriter. So I tend to try to write really sparse anyway, just because it would feel weird to me to, if I'm, like, it sounds weird to me when I'm over eloquent when I'm writing.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. Well, maybe from your writing reviews, you know, because you learned to condense early your thoughts. We just heard The Jaunt from Swarm of Flies. Before that, Heaven Channel Season 1, LP 8, Side A, Galextasy. This is Jared and Raquel out in Joshua Tree here. During this lockdown, 8 albums they've recorded so far in 4 months. So I don't want to hear anybody saying they're bored. And we started off the last chunk of music for this edition with Swarm of Flies, Mine All Along. And enlighten us to Swarm of Flies there, Ken.
So when the world just stopped, as we're all living through it right now, I didn't want to stop. So my main bands, Eternal Black and End of Hope, we were playing shows, we were working on albums, we were going full gas, and then all of a sudden, like everybody else had to go through, it's like, brakes on, you know, we can't go play shows. We had festivals we were supposed to be playing in May, like, we're not doing that.
Well, postpone, but you will down the road.
Yeah, I mean, postpone, but it's like, you know, nothing's going to happen in 2020, so... You know, what are you going to do with your time? And, you know, I wanted to keep making music. And then the first thing I did was I hadn't recorded at home in a while because with the bands, you know, when we're active and you can go to other people's places, we were recording at studios and stuff like that. And I'm like, you know what, I'm going to get the home gear kind of in shape. I'm going to update the software and catch up to where the world has been, because I think it had been like 10 years since I recorded at home. And then all of a sudden I'm like, whoa, the technology's much better. Like I use a old Marshall JMP head for my guitar parts in both bands, and I can get a plugin that simulates that exact head. Like, that's kind of cool. Let's play around with that. And then what I realized was, hey, I can still create new music, but I didn't want to do the, hey, program drums or just some solo, like, hey, it's me thing. Why not use it as a way to flex some different creative muscles, jam with some different people in a sort of remote way. So I just started reaching out to everybody who I admired, who I knew might be able to record at home, guys in bands I played with at shows or who'd been friends of mine for a while, and said, hey, do you want to play on this?
Trading files.
Yeah. So all I did was I would send a first layer, and the thing I figured out really quickly was I can't do like I do with my normal bands where like I can't put together a song, because then I'm taking away what the other person could give. So what I have to do is be really minimal and just give them a single layer and then, okay, you add on that and then you send that back to me and I may modify what I did or add something else and then I'm going to send that to somebody else, and just that back and forth and,
act,
so that song,
react, react, act, react. Yep. Yeah.
So it's a digital remote form of improvisation, if you will, because, you know, I'm not necessarily saying, no, don't do that. It's more of like, hey, I dig that. I may edit what you're doing, but I may also then put another layer on that. And so like that first song, or the song you just played, Mine All Along.
Yeah.
The guy singing is a guy named Earl Walker Lundy, who sings in this band Shadow Witch. And I was like, Earl, you want to do it? Yeah. He sent me back 3-part harmony. Yeah. I never in my life will ever sing 3-part harmony. I can growl. I can't sing 3-part harmony. Earl sends me back 3-part harmony, and it's beautiful sounding. And I'm like, oh, this just took this to another level. This is amazing. And then my drummer from End of Hope, Dave Richmond, who's like, he went to Berkeley. He's a phenomenal drummer. He adds something to everything he does. He sends back that drum part that's real swingy, and you're like, oh, this is fantastic. Or the other song, The Jaunt, that voiceover,
that's a
dude named Andy Martin from this band called Clam Fight, who's a friend of mine from Philadelphia. A lot of the weird drones and that surf guitar is this guy named Eric Kaplan, who's also from Philadelphia, this band Thunderbird Divine. They're good friends of mine. I'm like, hey, I got this thing. It's kind of like the Repo Man soundtrack thing. You want to play on it? It's like, yeah. Eric sent me like 6 different tracks. Andy goes, I want to do a spoken word thing. That cool with you? I'm like, absolutely. He comes back with that whole thing about the Stones and the Stars, yeah. And it's just a graveyard up in the sky. And I'm like, I never would have done this in the other two bands. There would never would have been anything that sounded like this.
Now I understand the name, Swarms of Dudes. So in a way, this isn't just a holding pattern. This is a whole other way of being expressive.
Oh, hell yeah. This is, you know, I'm playing different guitars. I learned how to play Moog. Like, I got the Moog app. There's that mini Moog app that they have that's actually pretty phenomenal. So on the jaunt, you'll hear that humming Moog part underneath. Like, I don't know how to play a Moog. I was like, I think there should be a Moog part here, and just figured it out.
And that's great. Hey, Ken, where can people find you on the internet?
So each band's got their own stuff. So eternalblack.bandcamp.com, endofhope.bandcamp.com, and swarmofflies.bandcamp.com.
And do you have a site for your writing?
Nah, I've kind of backburnered that for now.
Okay.
I got too much music to make.
I heard about Bandcamp. They're going to continue these Fridays.
That stuff's great. People always buy a lot of stuff from us and everything, you know.
And Fridays to give all the bones to the artist, right?
Yeah, it's great for us because, you know, for Eternal Black, we've got vinyl. For Eternal Black and Nope, we got CDs and shirts. So it's, yeah, I mean, if you're putting your wish list together, like, throw one of those bands on there for us.
Yeah. Look, any advice about your journey? For one thing, it's never too late to start guitar, right? That's for sure.
Oh, that's a big one, yeah. And you know what? One more thing on that was I did the smart thing, which was I played on my own for a little while. And then I got lucky where a guy named, you might know, Chris Haskett, who played with the Rollins Band for years. Chris was giving guitar lessons in New York City. Wow. And so I went, all right, I'm going to go take guitar lessons from this guy who, like, Rollins Band and End of Silence and those albums are massive for me. And I'm like, I'm going to go sit down with one of my idols and have him teach me guitar. And Chris is the nicest guy, super intelligent guy. And, like, I learned a ton from him. And then I went and kept playing. You know, after Chris stopped giving lessons, I kept playing. Then I formed bands. And even after I had formed my bands, I'm like, I need to learn some new stuff. But, like, I don't like my solos. They're not where I want them to be. And so Bob Balch from Fu Manchu gives lessons on Skype. And I'm like, I'm going to take lessons from Bob. And I learned a shit ton from Bob. And it's never too late. Like, you keep finding new ways to learn stuff. And sometimes you learn on your own. Other times, like, it's good to go study at the feet of a master and kind of see how they do it, you know?
Sure, but the main point is it's a fucking classroom. We're here to learn.
That's all life is.
Yeah. Big honor to have you aboard, Kent. Good luck. I can't wait to hear some more. Please flow me new Swarm of Flies as it comes, because this is interesting as
hell. I will.
But the other two projects, too. Really, the best of luck to you. Safe seas. Keep that keel in the water. People, it's been the July 25, 2020 edition of Watt Peaver Show. Keep your powder dry.